This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This little girl was led to believe, according to the state, that she and Burke had a future together, marriage, children. Sources indicate she was threatening to go public with their relationship. She was 11 when he began pursuing her.
A teen girl decomposing and their son's Tesla, and they're claiming their rights were violated. Silent tear.
You've read this autopsy report. Very rarely
yes,
have I felt nauseous reading an autopsy report. I don't
gruesome.
Even feel nauseous when I go to an autopsy. Prosecutors are saying she, Celeste, was killed in that home. He's like, what, a few feet away from where she was murdered and disarticulated? The most incendiary facts I can think of.
Today, I am announcing the charges against David Anthony Burke in connection with the brutal and horrific murder of Celeste.
According to one of Celeste Rivas, who met David Anthony Burke when she was age 14, that's when he began pursuing her. She was still wearing Hello Kitty outfits. The bestie comes forward and says, Celeste was pregnant. Dave Mack joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. What do we know?
Nancy, you remember just the other day, the autopsy or death certificate was updated on Celeste Rivas with regard to being pregnant, where at first it was not pregnant, they changed to not known. Well, now we find out her best friend sits down with Celeste Rivas in January, 12 weeks before she is murdered. And at her parents' home, Celeste Rivas is talking to her friend about running away because she's pregnant. And the friend says she's trying not to be judgy. She's talking to her, and the friend says, well, what do you mean run away? See, the friend thought that when Celeste said she was pregnant and she was going to run away from home to be with David, the friend thought it was just some, you know, kid from school, somebody in the neighborhood. She didn't know that Celeste Rivas was saying she was pregnant with David Anthony Burke's child. That's not what the friend knew. It was only after the fact, after Celeste was dead, that she realized what Celeste Rivas was telling her at that night in January of 2025, 12 weeks before she was murdered.
You know, speaking, following up on what Dave Mack just said, I want to show you a screenshot we also found, reportedly from Celeste to Burke. D, things are getting heavy. I'm really scared about everything. They're starting to ask questions. Call me when you see this. I need you. Dr. Bethany Marshall, how does this text purportedly from Celeste fit into the theory that she was pregnant or had been pregnant?
Nancy, what I see is a little girl who imagines she has a true relationship with a much older man, who imagines that they have a future together and potentially is thinking about keeping the baby to solidify her relationship with him and their love together. And so I imagine what is going on in her mind as a 14-year-old, as opposed to all these older kids, they're all kids, after the fact, laughing about her death, dancing on her grave, bringing out a casket at a funeral that day or the very next day after she is killed, and the disjuncture between what she thinks is going on and what they know is going on that she is going to be gotten rid of. She needs him. He needs to have her gone. Women who are pregnant are at a much higher risk of homicide, Nancy. You and I know that. And in some sick, twisted way, this is a 20-year-old man who's not going to let anything stand between him and his career. In his own mind, of course, now he has killed his whole career, but he doesn't want to let anything stand between him and his career, nor do all the other hangers-on in that household who are laughing about this. They are just going to carry on with their circus of filth And Celeste be damned.
I want you to take a listen to a clearer video. Now, of course, Colesrud is going to tell you this is all AI, but I'll let the viewer judge for themselves.
I media trained you. No, you didn't. That's controversial.
It's controversial of raping kids.
Really good. Okay, it's been a good one. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Mwah, 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 mwah. Oh, my. Delete everything. Delete everything. Everything goes. Everything goes.
Dave Mack, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Dave Mack, I think we've identified the motive.
Celeste comes forward to her best friend and says, I think I'm pregnant and I'm going to run away from my family and go to be with David. And again, the friend didn't even think about David Burke. She was just thinking it was a classmate of theirs, you know, and which is just boggling the mind. Because remember here, we're not dealing with a woman. We're dealing with a child who's 14 years old. But then, Nancy, as we get closer to the time, the argument, the text messages that we've seen between Celeste and Burke, we know that she had her fill. She seemed to be the more mature in the relationship. And she was coming forward to say, hey, man, you're not getting away with this. I'm going to tell everybody who you really are.
And whether or not she was pregnant at the time, Dave Mack, the fact is that sources indicate she was threatening to go public with their relationship. You mentioned she was 14. She was 11 when he began pursuing her. 11 years old. And we know they took, or we believe they took, trips overseas. If she had been pregnant, did she have an abortion there? Why did he keep taking her out of town? There are so many questions. Joe Scott Morgan, a death investigator, the reality is, due to the state of her decomposition after her body had been disarticulated, rendered, could you tell if she had had an abortion?
No, I think that would be very difficult. But let's also keep in mind, Nancy, that there's been mention of morning after pills as well. So I don't know if this was a reoccurrent theme with them. And this is kind of a ghastly road to go down when you begin to think about what she had been subjected to through repeatedly being raped because, you know, a child cannot consent to having sex. So rape after rape after rape. All right. And when you think about that, had she been, had she had multiple pregnancy, perhaps at some point in time, because there's redundancy here. You know, if you think about the fact that you've already got access to morning after tablets, and if this is something that she's being forced to take, for instance, and it paints a very grim picture. And yeah, they could have gone abroad, they could have gone anywhere else, and to have facilitated a termination of the pregnancy. But there's nothing there that you can really tell. Remember, the coroner had to go back and amend the autopsy report, and still we're sitting there thinking, well, there's not a lot here relative to pregnancy. Even when you look at the examination of her reproductive organs, it looks like, you know, standard dictation. They don't see anything there from a pathology standpoint. Even her uterus is within the normal sizes. All right. It's not swollen, which is something that you're looking for with a pregnancy, of course.
Is D4VD, the multimillionaire musician, caught on camera wrapping up a human finger? And that is from the D4VD tour video. Okay, let me get the dates right. Joining me, Susan Hendricks, investigative reporter, journalist, author of a bestseller, Down the Hill, My Descent into the Double Murder in Delphi. Susan Hendricks. He was going on tour, remember? Mm-hmm. Celeste was murdered just before his Withered tour. He was getting ready for the tour, and he was putting out all types of promotional videos. She was murdered just before he dropped the album and went on the tour. And after intense public outcry after Celeste's body is found in his Tesla. Let's just refresh everyone's recollection and show the Tesla in the impound parking lot where it smelled so badly. They opened the trunk and found the dead body. Why, Susan Hendricks, is he wrapping what appears to be a human finger?
I think everything with this guy is symbolic. He's shoving it in our faces. So let's say it's a human finger or a plastic finger. I think he knows what he's doing because, as you know, Celeste's fingers were not found when her body was discovered, two of her fingers. So I think he was enabled. He did what he wanted to do. We had merch that had blood all over, white shirts. He pulled that once cops started searching his house months later. But I think he did what he wanted to do, and he had the support of an entourage.
Guys, you're seeing video from D4VD's tour on TikTok. Is this part of the promotional video he's pushing out there that looks to be in his home where we believe, isn't this right, Dave Matt, Crime Stories investigative reporter? According to the court documents, prosecutors are saying she, Celeste, was killed in that home where we believe that finger-wrapping video was recorded. He's like, what, a few feet away from where she was murdered and disarticulated?
As disgusting as it sounds, absolutely right, Nancy. April 23rd, 10 o'clock at night, just after, that's when investigators say D4VD killed Celeste Rivas, right after she arrived at his home.
Randolph Rice joining us, high-profile lawyer out of Baltimore, former prosecutor, now veteran criminal defense and civil lawyer at Rice, Murtha, and Soros. Randolph Rice, first of all, it's not time for the jury trial. Dave Mack had it right. He wants to glow up. He wants to glam squad. His team, I guarantee you his lawyers didn't know this was happening, demand a new hairstyle and fresh clothes, designer clothes, for his appearance. There's not a jury. It's a preliminary hearing. H-E-double-L. Let me clarify. H-E-L-L. Hell no. Why is he not getting his designer threads?
Well, he's not getting his designer threads because, just as you said, Nancy, the judge does not care about how he looks because there's no jury there. But I will say, from a defense standpoint and from his standpoint and his team standpoint, this might be one of the first smart moves they are making here, because not only is this case going to be tried in the courtroom, but I think this case is going to be tried in the public. And remember, down the road, as his defense attorneys are going to have to pick a jury, it may help to have a good light on him moving forward.
Put him up. A good light. What? You know, and I know you know, I know your career very well. He is not entitled to street clothes, as we call them, unless there's a jury. No. Didn't you see Brian Koberger asking for the same thing? No, was the answer. N-O. D4VD's not getting it either, but that didn't stop his team from trying. Did it?
It didn't. And as my mother always said, if you don't ask, you don't get. So why not ask? It doesn't hurt. Look, the defense team and his team are going to ask every single question, every single thing that they can try to get over on the state. And I would do the same thing. They need to try to take advantage of every single opportunity, every single appearance. He needs to come out there looking the best he possibly can to have that favorable light on him as he moves forward with this trial.
Favorable light. Instead of getting a glow up with his glam squad behind bars, he should probably be worried about the evidence, such as putting out a video of him wrapping up what appears to be a human finger. Of course, it's not a human finger. Well, I hope it's not a human finger. I don't think it's a human finger. I think it's a toy or a replica. But that said, he's putting out the bad vibes. That's him. Yeah. Oh, thank you. There he is again. That's him wrapping up what appears to be a withered human finger, but is likely a toy replica. The point is, he is shooting himself in the foot. And another thing, while I've got you, Randolph Rice, he's not asking for his regular clothes. Let's see some photos of what D4VD usually wears. He's not asking for that. No. He wants designer clothes. He wants... Oh, yeah, that is not how he wants to appear in court. He wants to wear a pair of dress slacks and a button down. Right? I've never seen him in a button down. He wants to present a false facade to spectators. What about it, Randolph? Busted.
Genius. Genius. I think it's a good move on his defense part and his team's part. And let me just say one thing about this finger. Everybody's talking about this, is this is something that's going to hurt his case. I can tell you, his attorneys, and if I was attorney too, I would be going to the mat, filing a motion limine, which, did you know, Nancy, is just a motion to exclude evidence. That video never sees the light of day in a courtroom because it is irrelevant. Unless the prosecutors can prove that that has something to do with Celeste, with the victim in this case, it is not coming into court.
That is from at Sakura Shimko on Twitch. Okay, I got a huge A-list panel tonight, but I got to go to Tom Smith first. Former NYP detective, 30 years, narc, robbery, gang, murder, FBI joint terrorism task. He is the star, the co-host of Gold Shields podcast. Did you hear that, or do I need to play it again? Once you smell a decomposing body at a murder scene, you never forget it. And you don't confuse it with a backed up commode. I mean, I can't wait. I hope, I pray the prosecutors play this for the jury. He, according to them, orders her up on an Uber, like she's Uber Eats, pays $200-$300 to get her to his place, then compares her body, her decomposing body, to him, quote, taking a his words, not mine, in his bathroom. Can he do anything more demeaning to this little girl?
No, not at all. I mean, he is the epitome of a monster. And we've gone through other monsters in the criminal justice world, and he is right up there. You know, when you have someone who has such a disregard for a human being to treat her the way that he did, I mean, it is a different level, Nancy. But this is why investigations take time, because you want to get all the information like this out there for the prosecution, for the police department to make a stronger case. Because when you have people like this who commit crimes, they have no idea what is to come. So they cannot game plan what's to come. And this is where they get jammed up. And this is why prosecutions are successful and investigations end in a good way.
Straight out to Caitlin Becker joining us. She is a senior national correspondent at the New York Post. She's the host of a hit podcast, NY Postcast. Get it? NY Post, NY Postcast. Caitlin, thanks for being with us. I mean, really, I know that it's your job to report the facts with no emotion, without making any judgment calls, but really, her body is decomposing. And Caitlin, I don't know if in your business you've ever had to go to a murder scene or been there when a body was discovered. It hits you like a cement brick, the smell. It's, people vomit when they smell it. That's how bad it is. I've seen rookie cops vomit when they come on a crime scene or smell decomp for the first time. Did you know about this video we found?
I didn't, Nancy. The first time I'm seeing this video is you playing it right now, and I'm with the guy in the corner whose eyes were going back and forth. He looked completely baffled by what was going on. I don't know if it's stupidity or hubris or arrogance in this case, that it just seems like after this crime was committed and the premeditation of the committing of the crime, that there just seems to be this massive digital trail left, as if this guy never thought he was going to be held accountable for allegedly murdering this girl. I mean, just this video, I have to imagine there's more things like this out there. And you add that to the list of evidence that prosecutors say they have, digital evidence, as you say, the ordering of her like she's Chinese food on an Uber app, that's going to her house, being ordered allegedly by him to his house with a driver in the car, taking her back and forth to confirm it would be her in there, not to mention the litany of other pieces of evidence that digitally showed premeditation and what happened afterwards. It's just, it's baffling to me. And you're right that I'm supposed to come at this as objectively as I possibly can, looking at the facts, but it's almost impossible to do it in this case because it's so arrogant and aggressive and obnoxious, the behavior that we're seeing displayed by this person in the day and the days after the killing.
Dr. Cheryl, this little girl was led to believe, according to the state, that she and Burke had a future together, marriage, children. One particularly poignant photo to me is her ring finger, which was, by the way, amputated to hide the fact that his name, David, was tattooed on it. She actually was wearing an engagement ring. This little girl thought they were getting married and having a family. And she's talking about how they were connected before they existed and that she will love him even after she dies.
She did. This is so chilling and harrowing. And this is something that we see a lot in sexual abuse cases with a young victim in the grooming process, that this is something where the child believes that they are in a relationship, they're in a romantic relationship, that it isn't abuse, that something is going to happen in the future. She thought she was important to him. And the video you played is so heartbreaking because I see a girl who is trying to advocate for herself and speak up. Why don't you hold my hand anymore? There are other quotes. She wants something more for herself. She was in love with him and he treats her like she's completely disposable, like she's garbage. He ordered her delivered to him, as you said, and then he ordered all of these things to hide her body delivered to him as well. I really think that the combination of the age difference and his status and his celebrity and that way that can change mm-hmm. people in how they relate and the things they let pass and how dazzling it must have been for this child to have this special attention and get to travel. And even when her parents tried to take away her phone or keep her from seeing him, it seems like they were no match for him being able to go and bribe and use the resources that he had to have access to her. And it sounds like she just wanted to love him and was trying to get him to see her and show that she mattered. And it this is so chilling and so incredibly tragic. And you know, Nancy, the idea that this sort of split personality defense, and I understand that defense attorneys need to come up with something. It just makes me think of when we covered the Jodi Arias case and she said ninjas came in and did it and she didn't. It seems so incredibly out there. And if, you know, as a forensic psychologist, if someone says, I didn't do it, my split personality self did it, you still need to contain the same person in a controlled environment. And it'll be very interesting to see what they do in terms of the defense, if they go for a psychological defense, because that's a tough road to go, to say that this was dissociative, that there was some kind of split personality. We would need to see a lot of fragmentation and splitting, a lot of psychological evidence that I have not seen thus far. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but I haven't seen it. And if someone were in an altered state, I don't know that they would be able to do all of the things that seem to indicate premeditation.
That was then, this is now. And what I've got in my hands, the people's brief regarding preliminary hearing evidence. And it is full of the most incendiary facts I can think of. Correction to me. You, Dave Mack, Crime Stories investigative reporter. I said 13, but isn't it true that this document reveals David Anthony Burke lured this little girl at age 11 years old?
That's exactly right, Nancy. 11 years old, documented. That's the first time David Anthony Burke met Celeste Rivas.
And isn't it true, Dave Mack? I'm looking through the preliminary hearing brief. We find out that D4VD, David Anthony Burke, the multimillionaire, went to the effort to go to send someone. No, he went himself to the school playground, the school, the elementary school, and pays another kid $1,000 to give Celeste Rivas a secret cell phone so they can send naughty pictures to each other. Isn't that true?
Yeah, because that's exactly true, Nancy, because Celeste's family, they found out what was going on and took away her cell phone. They found Burke's number in her personal cell phone, and they said no, and they took away her cell phone. Burke found out a sneaky way, paid one of her child friends to $1,000. Think about a kid getting $1,000 to give her a secret cell phone.
Oh, cruel. But what is so upsetting? It's all upsetting. But joining me now is a special guest, Dr. Kendall Crowns. He is the chief medical examiner, Tarrant County. He is the host of a hit podcast, Mayhem in the Morgue. He is the esteemed lecturer at the Burnett School of Medicine at TCU. I can go on and on and on, but let me just stop with chief medical examiner, Tarrant County. Dr. Kendall Crowns, how long does it take for a human, much less a child, a little girl, to bleed out, exsanguinate?
So it depends on what's cut. If you get your carotids, your jugulars cut in your neck, you're going to bleed out in a matter of under a minute or so. If your heart's stabbed, you're going to bleed out, and again, under a minute or so. But in the information that we have, she's stabbed in the abdomen, in the chest, one wound going into her liver. The liver is a very vascular organ. She's going to bleed internally into her abdominal cavity. She'll probably die in under 10 minutes from blood loss.
So we've got a max 10 minutes?
About that, yes.
Okay. Let's just hold on to that thought one moment. Susan Hendricks, investigative reporter, journalist, author of a bestseller, Down the Hill, My Descent into the Double Murder in Delphi. That's talking about Abby and Libby that were murdered by Richard Allen in Delphi. Susan, this document by the state, by the prosecutors, states that D4VD stood by and watched Celeste, this little girl, bleed out, wait for it, in a blue kiddie pool that he, idiot, bought on Amazon. And isn't it true, Susan Hendricks, that minute microscopic bits of blue plastic were found in the insides, in the wounds to her body? And we were thinking, what is that? Of course, they had to take the tissue, take her skin, and look at it under a microscope. And then they went, what are these blue particles? It's the kiddie pool.
Yep. And now we know what it was. And fitting for her, they met when she was 11, still having braces, goes to her middle school. When he finds out, her mom says he can't see her anymore, took her phone away. I know, I'll go to the middle school, give a kid $1,000. The kiddie pool. It's fitting for Celeste. The details here, exactly what the DA, Hoffman, said. Nathan, he said there are special circumstances, and I agree. It's laid out perfectly.
Did he order the pool, the inflatable kiddie pool, on Amazon? And if so, what else did he order on Amazon?
Yes, he did. And I have a list. I mean, it goes on and on. Just the convenience to him of this. And at first, Nancy, you mentioned the pool. I thought it was a tarp. And now, more horrific that we know it was a kiddie pool. Here's the list. Two chainsaws, a shovel from Home Depot, a burn cage on Amazon. I didn't know what that was. Garbage bags again. The list goes on and on. I'm picturing him just scrolling and ordering to get rid of this young girl.
Straight out to special guest joining us, Caitlin Becker, senior national correspondent, New York Post, host of podcast NY Postcast. Caitlin, bombshell autopsy report. And I'm wondering, now that I've seen the autopsy report, why the LAPD insisted it stay under seal for so long. Maybe because it's so incendiary. Remember at the get-go, Caitlin, a lot of news outlets were saying they can't determine COD. We have sources inside the medical examiner's office. They can't tell COD because she's decomposed. One and two, dismembered. BS. Technical legal term. They've had the COD for months now, and that is death by a sharp object. So, what can you tell us? Do we know why the LAPD wanted it kept secret for so long?
We don't know why they wanted to keep it secret for so long. This was determined back in December at the end of 2025. And we did have sources at the Post that we spoke to who told us the same thing that you had heard from other sources as well. They couldn't determine the cause of death. They couldn't say it was a homicide because they couldn't figure out how she died. But this, as you said, explosive bombshell autopsy was so disturbing and gruesome and brutal, but clearly laid out at least two areas where she was very clearly stabbed with something, even to the point where they were noting the angle with which the knife went in. It was between 3 and 9 o'clock. And if you think about going down like this, that's exactly how you would hold a knife. So the fact that this was sitting there for all of these months is baffling.
Caitlin, you've read this autopsy report. Very rarely
have I
felt nauseous reading an autopsy report. I don't even feel nauseous when I go to an autopsy. When I read this, I felt nauseous. I got hot all over because I think of Celeste as that little girl, 13 years old, and bombshell tonight. We are learning that D4VD, a.k.a. David Anthony Burke, met Celeste allegedly when she was 12. He's a grown
possibly
man.
Possibly as early as 11.
What is he doing with a 12-year-old girl, Caitlin Becker?
Nothing good and nothing legal, Nancy. So the New York Post compiled a bunch of Discord, Reddit, chat room clips and screenshots going back to 2023 and then back to potentially 2021, where she was maybe 11, 12 at the oldest, where they were apparently together. These disturbing messages with people on Reddit and Discord saying that he had a girlfriend. Her name was Celeste. It was something with a C. She was in middle school. So this seemed to be no surprise to some of the fans who were operating in some of these chat rooms and circles. One of them looked like it was even a conversation between the two of them in a chat room, where it's October 2023, where someone that appears to be David says, is Celeste here? And a screen name that appears to be Celeste says, David Bark or Burke, but it was, she wrote B-A-R-K-K-K-K-K to just be kind of cutesy as a 12-year-old would be online. But even going back further, Nancy, her missing persons flyer indicated that she was in Hello Kitty sandals, which just that image in and of itself is troubling. It gives you an idea of just how young she is. But there was a post that David had posted of a photo that included some Hello Kitty Crocs that you could see at the bottom, and then a caption where he made some disturbing reference to the Hello Kitty girl that got him in 2021. So now we're talking about grade school aged. It is so troubling and grotesque in so many ways to know that information that we uncovered, and then you put it with the way she was found by investigators, it really does make you sick to your stomach.
Put up Dubay. Philip Dubay joining us, veteran criminal defense attorney, joining us out of this jurisdiction, L.A. The Hello Kitty girl, 12 years old, when D4VD puts the moves on her, she's missing an eyeball and she's skeletonized. Thoughts? Why shouldn't this be a death penalty case?
This is not a capital case. It might be on paper, but this young man has absolutely no criminal record. I do not see a jury ever executing him. I think best case scenario is that this could result in a plea bargain. But even then, I think it's highly doubtful because his max is life without parole. What on earth would be the incentive for him to take a deal that would involve life behind bars anyway? So I actually think that this may be overfiled.
Put him up. You know, Philip Dubé, I like you. But I got to ask you a question. When you do all that manscaping right there, do you ever actually look at yourself in the mirror? How can you say that? The girl was 12. Celeste Rivas was 12 when D4VD, the big musician, puts moves on her. And now she's dead in his trunk, her body in pieces. Her left eyeball is gone. Wonder what happened to that. Joe Scott Morgan is going to tell you that when you decompose, your eyeball doesn't just disappear. Where is her eyeball? Why did she have MDMA in her system? Meth in her system? Why? Why is this not a death penalty case? If this is not a death penalty case, what is?
There has to be some evidence, A, that he's the one who actually did it. Merely having a corpse is not proof beyond a reasonable doubt that he is, in fact, the actual killer. At most, what you have is him having constructive possession of her because her remains were found in the car. Now, having said that, the jury is going to have to find, assuming it even goes to a penalty phase, that he's irreformable, irredeemable, and that the only just outcome for him would be California's lethal injection. I predict that no jury will ever execute this young man.
Dave Mack, where are the parents in all of this? They reported Celeste as a runaway once and then went radio silent.
And Nancy, they stayed fairly silent until yesterday. And they were at court. They were there. And we were told, the media was told, that they would be talking, making a statement to the press. But that did not happen. So ever since this case exploded last September, the family has remained silent since the first week, and we still have not heard from them right now.
Question, Dave Mack, were they ever spotted out looking for their daughter?
No, Nancy. They reported her missing, and here's the kick. They reported her missing, and she was then, Celeste was then seen back at the home in the complex area in the weeks and months following the initial report of her being missing, but she was never reported as having come back home. The family never alerted authorities. Oh yeah, she's not missing anymore. We know where she is. A lot of questions around the family, what they knew and what they didn't know. But bottom line is they did report her missing first week of April, 2024. And Celeste was seen back in their home area after she was reported missing.
Not another word. Well, the parents have not been charged with anything as of right now. Troy Slayton, veteran defense attorney out of L.A. Troy, in many jurisdictions, failure to report your child missing is a crime.
It very well could be, and it doesn't seem like the family was too concerned. It seems to me that they knew. Now, look, a parent can't consent to have their child engage in activity at age 13 or 14. There is no evidence that they were coming around the house and that they were out, you know, searching for their daughter. It doesn't appear that they were being very vigilant. I'm not blaming them. I'm not saying that it's the parents' fault. I'm just saying that we don't have any evidence.
No, you would never. Well, you know what? I will.
And what we also
where were
don't
they?
Have, Nancy,
where were
is
they
we don't have
during
anyone,
all of we, this? Celeste is dead
we
now.
We don't have anyone.
What?
We don't have anyone publicly, Nancy, who has come out and said that they saw a murder or that they knew about a murder. All we know is that a person was found dead at David's house or in his car that was registered to him, that she last went to his house and that she was found in a car. There's a whole lot in the middle of this chain, Nancy, that the prosecutors
Troy
are going to have to prove in order to get a murder conviction here.
I don't know why you're saying we don't know, because we haven't had a trial yet. That's why we don't know. But the L.A. district attorney did say this.
Is there physical evidence that ties David to this murder?
There is physical evidence and there is forensic and digital evidence that we intend to present in court to prove these charges beyond a reasonable doubt.
David Anthony Burke, a.k.a. D4VD, pleads not guilty. And interesting, this was not a grand jury indictment. There was a grand jury that investigated, called witnesses in the case. Now there will be a preliminary hearing. And Dave Mack, that's like a mini trial where we will hear state's witnesses, probably just state's witnesses. Isn't that set for April 23?
It is, Nancy. By law, this preliminary hearing has to be held within 10 days.
I'm going to get back to everything else we are learning, but I'm going to go straight out to a veteran trial lawyer. Joanna Nieves is joining us from California, criminal defense attorney and founder of the Nieves Law Firm. Joanna, thank you for being with us. So this is what's happening to my understanding, and you jump in. Joanna, the family of D4VD, David Anthony Burke, pronounced as David, has been subpoenaed, the whole family, to testify in a grand jury proceeding regarding the death of Celeste Rivas, the little girl found in Burke's trunk. Let's see that Tesla. It was parked in spot to spot on a posh street there in California until it was finally towed at the behest of one of the homeowners. Days sitting at the tow lot, and it started a stench. Why? Because Celeste Rivas was decomposing in the trunk. We were told there is an investigative grand jury. Nieves, I believe you will agree with me that grand juries have two tools. One, a charging tool to indict people, and one, an investigation tool. For instance, in the JonBenet Ramsey case, the grand jury met and they met and they met and they met investigating JonBenet's death. They ultimately did issue an indictment, but that case was not prosecuted. So a grand jury can meet to investigate. They have subpoena power. They can bring in witnesses, or they can charge. We were told this was an investigation into Celeste's death. Now we have an official court document filed by the parents contesting them having to come from Texas to California to testify in State v. David Anthony Burke. So a case against him, a case investigating him, does exist. Explain what's happening, Joanna.
Right, Nancy. So I do believe that it does outline what the target of this investigation is. It's not just trying to uncover who it may be and get more information. Obviously, they're trying to focus their energies on identifying incriminating information against this particular person that's named in the footnote there in the charging document, assuming that that was cited properly. I would guess that they took that from the grand jury subpoena that was received. The filing itself, I think, is kind of more procedural, right? They're in Texas. This is happening in California. And it's their attempt to say, you know what, I don't really feel like California can drag me over there based on this subpoena. And I want a court to say that, yes, absolutely, you have the authority to make me come and testify. So I think it's kind of like one of those procedural things where you're contesting the validity of a confidential informant, or you're contesting the validity of a warrant, or the validity of a search. They're really just saying, hey, just make sure that you really do have the arm's reach to make me come from Texas to California here.
Specifically, what they are arguing, it is Dawood Burke, the father, D4VD's mother, Colleen, and his brother, Caleb, all summoned to testify at a California grand jury. Now, they are contesting that, claiming their rights have been violated. Why do they claim their rights were violated? They claim that they were given redacted versions of affidavits that were used in the court order summoning them to be witnesses. Okay, Joanna Nieves. Let me see Nieves, please. Really? Celeste is a little girl, a teen girl, decomposing, and their son's Tesla, and they're claiming their rights were violated. Silent tear. Because the affidavit supporting that warrant, that subpoena for them, had a name redacted. That's the leg they're standing on. Good luck.
I think we see this pretty often, though. Like, hey, there are rules that you have to follow. There is information that we need. Give me proper notice. That's the basis of so many arguments. Even when I just mentioned like a confidential informant, oftentimes that kind of objection to the information is based on not being able to see what was in the affidavit that was drafted by the police officer, even when contesting a search warrant. We see this pretty often. So I don't think that they are making absurd arguments. I do think they're just trying to protect their interests and, of course, the interests of their son at this point, because he's still innocent until proven guilty.
I was waiting for you to say that. But this is not an adjudication of guilt or innocence. This is telling a witness you must come to the grand jury. And yes, notice must be proper. In other words, they have to be served with a subpoena properly. There has to be a date, a location, the name of the matter to which they will testify. But the fact that names have been redacted in the affidavit, they don't even have to see an affidavit. All right? But they do have an affidavit to support the subpoena. The fact that they got notice correctly, there is the name of the matter to which they will end up testifying to. That's what they need. It was registered. It was certified. Bam. They don't need to know the state's case, and they don't need to know sensitive information such as names that are in the affidavit. That is not required under the law. Yes, you're right. They have to have notice. Yes, you're right. They have to know what the matter is on which they will testify. But that's it. So they don't have a leg to stand on. But I'm very curious. Let's talk about privilege, such as attorney-client privilege. I'm sure that your clients speak very openly with you. They may even confess. They may prejudice themselves in front of you because you're their trusted lawyer, and your duty is, or you will be disbarred if you violate the attorney-client privilege, right? The rest of your life, you may not speak of it. That's the duty of a lawyer. I have the same duty. So you got the attorney-client privilege. You've got priest parishioner privilege, such as what you tell to your preacher, your priest, religious counselor, your rabbi. That cannot be forced in court. The rabbi, the priest, cannot be forced to divulge what the defendant said. You've got husband-wife privilege. There are several privileges. But he's my daddy ain't one of them, Nieves.
No, for sure. But, you know, I do think there's word that David's dad does have some type of affiliation with the church. And I do wonder whether or not he may take some kind of stand that his son
what
has.
What did you just say?
Him from that perspective.
I thought you were going to hit me with the fact that his father's a lawyer, so he could try to use attorney-client privilege.
His dad is a lawyer.
But you're going, he has an affiliation with the church. What affiliation would that be? He drives by it on Sunday mornings?
You know, and here, all of this is all reported, right? It's reported that he's some type of reverend with the church.
Okay, you know what? There's a reason you win so many cases. See, look at Nieves right now. She looks believable. She's smart. She's articulate. And she says things like that, and you almost believe it. He has some affiliation with a church. You just said that. Okay, so you're going from the angle that it is a parishioner privilege. Is that correct?
It's an angle. I don't know that they're really actually going to go with it, but maybe some of the conversations that have happened, if there really is this sort of affiliation, could fall under those protections.
If you know or think you know anything regarding the murder of little Celeste Rivas, please call 213-486-6890. We remember American hero investigator Anthony Freeman, Bibb County Sheriff's, Georgia, killed in the line of duty after 7 years, leaving behind his wife, now widow, Jessica, and two children, Braden and Blakeland, sentenced to life without dad. American hero investigator Anthony Freeman, thank you to our guests, but especially to you for being with us as we seek justice for Celeste. Nancy Grace signing off. I'll see you tomorrow night. And until then, good night, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.